Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Good evening, children of the night, and welcome. Just a quick note before we get started that Tales to Terrify is now officially closed for submissions. Thanks to all of the fantastic authors who submitted your stories. We've got some truly terrifying tales we're excited to produce and share with you in the coming months, and many more stories that we've yet to even go through. The Tales to Terrify team has been reading voraciously. So, if you submitted something and haven't heard back from us, rest assured we'll be in touch. And once again, a huge thank you to Julia Zellman, Meredith Morgenstern, Pete Morsellino, and Seth Williams for helping to hand-pick our next season of horrors. That said, even with submissions closed, we'll continue to accept flash fiction via email, talestoterrify@gmail.com. Flash is anything less than 2,000 words, and while we don't pay for flash fiction, it is a great opportunity to have your work produced and piped straight into thousands of hungry ears. Lastly, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that we're looking to update the theme music for Tales to Terrify. Well, the GoFundMe page is up and running, and if you're able to, we'd love your support. Simply head over to GoFundMe.com and search for Tales to Terrify. Link is also in the show notes. We've got an amazing producer lined up, and I'd love to kick this next season of Tales off with an auditory bang. Okay, we're all gassed up with ghoulish tales. We've talked about new tunes. I think it's time we hit the road. This week, we roll into Connecticut, the first of the New England states we'll be exploring in the next few weeks. As a region, the very soil of New England seems to be sown with the dark, mysterious, and supernatural. In fact, it's home to some of the most well-known authors in our genre. Maybe it's the long history of conflict and colonial settlement, or the often dark deeds that mar the history of the region, like spots of mold blooming from peeling wallpaper. But it's an area that seems to crave the macabre, to feed on it. And also, an area where the line between history and legend is often blurred. A line that, for our purposes, is always so much better when it's shrouded in darkness. As for the state of Connecticut, it's perhaps best known as the site of the supposedly true tale, A Haunting in Connecticut, the story of the Snedeker family's horrifying experiences after moving into a home in Southington in 1986. The state also happens to be home to another, even more recent Hollywood horror legend, the possessed doll who spawned her own Conjuring spin-off series, a doll affectionately known as Annabelle. But that's not who we're here to meet. I feel like pop culture's already got a decent enough handle on those stories. We're going to turn our gaze on someone who sits a little further away from the spotlight. There was nothing particularly interesting about Hannah Hovey, or at least not that her neighbors noticed when she and her husband, Captain Joseph Hovey, moved to the village of Monroe, Connecticut, sometime around 1800. The couple had no children, but by all accounts, their marriage was happy enough. Sure, Hannah was sometimes known to be a bit difficult, and the couple had their troubles from time to time, but what couple didn't? Each night after dinner, while Hannah would busy herself cleaning or knitting by the fire, her husband Joseph would venture out into the woods for a walk. It was a well-worn routine, weaving along the forest trail, then up the spine of a ridge overlooking a ravine before circling back toward home. Night after night, he'd follow the familiar path. It was a calming routine, helped him clear his mind. But one fall evening, Joseph didn't return from his nightly wandering. It took a few days for his absence to register with the neighbors, but Joseph's body was soon discovered at the base of the cliff where he often walked, twisted and broken. And almost before his remains were even brought back to town, word began to spread. Whispers of fear and disbelief, of misdeeds and dark intent. Joseph knew the route well, they said, and there was no reason why, after so many passes along the ridge, he should suddenly and unexpectedly fall to his death. Dark forces were certainly at play, they whispered, and all fingers turned to point in one direction. His wife, Hannah. Hannah, it seems, had remained unusually calm throughout the search and recovery, and now she'd stopped coming into town, too. She'd always been a little odd, they said, unnatural in a way. The few people who did cross Hannah's path noted that, even months and years after her husband's death, she wore nothing but black, long, flowing gowns that swept the ground when she walked. Surely, between her reclusive ways, strange habits, and dark garb, there was only one possible conclusion to be drawn. Hannah was a witch, and she'd hexed her husband to a grisly death. Hannah's legend began to spread like rot through the community. Hannah Crana, they began to call her, which is Scottish for a rocky place, after where they had found her husband's dead body. Her home in the woods became a place where people feared to go, rumored to be guarded by dozens of snakes, and Hannah's familiar, a rooster named Old Boreas, an infernal creature who would crow only at the strike of 3 a.m., the witching hour. Unlike the supposed witches of Salem from a century earlier, who hid and denied their occult practices, Hannah made the most of her reputation. She would often demand goods and services from her neighbors, and if they failed to humor her, she'd hex them. One neighbor, a renowned baker, gave in when Hannah requested one of the fresh pies cooling on the windowsill. But she made the mistake of giving Hannah the smallest of the batch. As a result, the women's pies were never delicious again. One young man was caught fishing in the brook on Hannah's property, and after Hannah was through with him, never caught another fish for the rest of his life. A group of men decided to detour their ox cart past Hannah's home to mock her. Next thing they knew, their oxen had frozen stiff, and the wheels had spontaneously fallen off the cart. There were plenty of other tales of her taking out her displeasure or foul mood on the townsfolk, too. Mostly small curses and acts of mischief, but wherever she could, Hannah would use her powers and reputation to her advantage. When Old Boreas, her familiar, died in 1859, Hannah believed she wasn't far behind, and she told the villagers as much. Shortly after, following a heavy winter storm, a villager came across Hannah, lying by the roadside in a weakened state. "I'm not well," Hannah muttered matter-of-factly. "I will die soon, and if you want to avoid trouble, heed my words. I'm not to be buried until after sundown, and my coffin must be carried from the house to my grave by hand. No cart or sledge. Do this or be hexed." Only days later, Hannah died. But despite her requests, the icy path and winter weather made it challenging for the townspeople to carry the coffin. So they put the coffin on a sledge and began to pull it toward the cemetery. Suddenly the coffin began to shift and rock, coming free from the sledge and sliding into the snow. The men hoisted the coffin back on and began again to move. Mere feet had passed when again the coffin came free. After two attempts to keep Hannah on the sled, the men gave up and carried her, slipping and sliding, the rest of the way by hand. Due to the delay, they arrived at the graveside just minutes after sunset and buried her in the cold earth. Upon returning down the road, though, they saw a bright, warm flickering through the trees. Emerging from the path, they discovered Hannah's cottage completely engulfed in roaring flames without any conceivable cause. After that, things calmed down around town for the most part. The Wicked Witch of Monroe was dead, but it seems she's not entirely finished with her mischief. Her gravestone, which you can still see today at Gregory's Four Corners Burial Ground on Spring Hill Road in Trumbull, Connecticut, sits perilously close to a road. And it's said that some nights her spirit emerges to frighten passing motorists and cause them to crash. Even in death, it seems, Hannah Crannah still enjoys a good hex from time to time. Let's conjure up some fiction. We have one story for you this evening, which comes from Rich Larson. Rich Larson was born in Galmi, Niger, has studied in Rhode Island and worked in southern Spain, and now lives in Ottawa, Canada. His stories have been translated into Chinese, Vietnamese, Polish, French, and Italian, and appear in numerous Year's Best anthologies. He was the most prolific author of short fiction in 2015 and 2016. His debut collection, Tomorrow Factory, was published by Nightshade Books in May 2018, and his debut novel, Annex, from Orbit Books, in July 2018. Children of the Night, join me for Rich Larson's Dark Warm Heart, first published on Tor.com, April 2017.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The bite mark was wine red on anemic white, crenellating Christine's bare shoulder. She moved the strap of her nightgown when Noel stumbled into the kitchen, drawn by the sizzle and clank of the frying pan, so he would be sure to see it. "Morning," she said, sliding the sausages onto a paper towel.
"Hey."
Noel stopped short, still scratching at the wiry hair up his belly. He frowned.
"Did I do that?"
"No," Christine said dryly. She dabbed at the grease. "Somebody else. While you were gone, I cheated with a hyena." Noel came closer, whispering one finger along the ruined skin. Shook his head.
"Shit,"
he said, wrapping her waist.
"Désolé. I didn't mean to."
"Good," Christine said. She tipped her head back for a kiss. "I don't mind it," she decided, plucking at his hand. "See? We match."
"Yes. Lucky."
Noel held up his broad hand, two of the fingers still scarred purple from frostbite.
"What do you call it? An accent color?"
Christine laughed and gave him a small shove towards the white table. Noel sat down in his old spot like he'd never left while she doled out sausages and toast with margarine. The small kitchen was still crammed full with gleaming wedding gift appliances.
"So you finally had someone to laugh at your jokes?"
Noel asked, sawing with his knife. Christine smiled.
"What? The hyena?"
Yeah. She watched Noel sniff at the sausage like he'd been rescued off some island instead of from the YEG airport late last night. And he always ate the leftovers. Noel laughed, warm like an electric blanket, and she wished she'd told him the night before. There had been no space for words, just skin and sweat in a bed that had been too big for too many weeks. And she'd waited this long, hadn't she?
"I'm going to start on the transcription today,"
Noel said, chewing. "Already?" Christine asked. "You weren't going to, I don't know, warm up for a day? Relax?"
"It's not so warm here either, Chrissy."
He nodded toward the sliding door, half frosted over and the pinwheeling flakes beyond it.
"It's snowing."
"Warmer than your igloo in NWT," Christine suggested. "I have to run a few errands, unless you want me to stay and help you with, you know, the bilabial sounds." She leaned forward and pressed both her lips against his. They felt dry.
"I didn't sleep in an igloo," Noel said when they broke, but grinning. "All right, I'll wash up. Leave the plates."
Christine went to the pristine bathroom, which would not be pristine for long now that Noel was back. She'd almost missed seeing his bristles in the sink. She turned the shower on, hot. The mirror fogged fast. She retched a few times over the toilet, but nothing came up, so she stepped inside the shower. After, while the curling iron was heating up, she rummaged a tube of concealer out of her vanity drawer. She shook it as she eyed the bite mark, debating. She put the concealer back. The mark was somehow like a checked box, a reminder that Noel was real, and he was home, and he loved her to death. And it was nothing like the cuts up her legs she'd hidden in high school. When she passed through the kitchen, keys jangling in her fingers, Noel was already swallowed up between Bose headphones, the noise-canceling kind. His face looked thin and sharp, and his eyes were tracking across the laptop screen. Left, right. Left, right. "Don't work too hard," Christine said, once she'd tugged one of the headphones down.
"I would never,"
Noel said.
"Thank you for breakfast."
He brushed crumbs off his lip before he kissed her goodbye, but the sausages were still sitting on the plate, uneaten. Christine handed him a Tupperware container on her way out the door. Her shoulder throbbed while she was getting cash from the ATM. It throbbed when she pushed through the grade 5-6 portable doors to pick up the worksheet she'd forgotten to photocopy. It throbbed when she shivered in the meat section of Superstore, trying to remember if Noel liked minute steaks. And it throbbed when she returned home to find him still at the table with his face sickly awash in laptop light. He'd forgotten he cooked Sundays. "Hey, Mr. Linguist, have you even moved?" Christine asked, opening the fridge freezer. Cold billowed out as she put the steaks in, then fished for an ice tray.
"Buy me a catheter,"
Noel said. He gave a wan grin.
"This is great shit, Chrissy. Come listen."
"I don't speak Inuktitut." Noel laughed and said it wasn't Inuktitut, and then the room was quiet except for the crack pop of ice cubes into a Ziploc. Christine wrapped the bag in a wet cloth, still watching Noel watching the screen, and held it against her shoulder. "All right," she said. "Show me."
"Come." Noel slipped the headphones from around his neck and held the ice against Christine's shoulder while she put them on. The feedback volume made her jump. Sorry. Noel dialed it down with a practiced finger. Christine repositioned the headphones and listened. It was a low, guttural wail, broken up by a sort of huffing. When she listened harder, she could hear an uncanny melody. Nice. What is it? She looked to the screen where the spectrogram was showing the noise slither along, pitch black, undulating through the grayscale background. It made her think of ultrasounds. Throat singing, Noel said.
Beautiful. I tried it when I was up there. Very difficult.
He turned the volume up slightly.
This is just the icing, though. You know, for when I get tired of the interviews. There are so many stories. Some of them never heard in English. Never.
Christine watched him maneuver the mouse through his crowded screen, over IPA charts and reference logs. He pulled up another audio file. The throat singing was replaced by an old man's voice and a dialect that Noel said was all but extinct. She sat in his lap and they pushed their heads together, each using one side of the headphones, and listened. Noel's cheek scratched her cheek and his arms ended up around her, but with the ice trickling on her shoulder, she couldn't feel warm. And it wasn't the time. It happened in the night. Noel's knee was keyed between her knees. His arm was over her arm. They'd fucked again. Not so frantically this time, and Christine was still awake when Noel plucked her hand out from under the covers. She turned in the dark and saw his eyes were not quite closed. Hey, she said, moving back against him. He didn't say anything, didn't make a noise. He brought her hand up to his face, slowly, deliberately, with his thumb at her wrist. In the quiet, Christine could imagine the sound of her pulse against his skin. He opened his mouth and kissed his way along her arm, teeth skimming her, making her shiver. Christine half smiled. "What are you doing?" she whispered.
"Whatever I want,"
Noel mumbled into her skin. He gnawed at her wrist bone, tickling her. "I'm so glad you made it home," Christine said. "I'm just, you know, I was scared shitless when I heard about the storms, when you called." Noel bit down, playful. Christine winced. "Easy, boy, I don't need another one." Noel's teeth pressed harder, deeper, so she could feel each individual crown. "Noel, stop! You're getting spit on me, stop!" Noel pulled back a moment, tracing the indented skin with his finger. And then he bit down again, not playful, a sudden, sharp snap, like an animal. "Ouch!" Christine jerked away. "Noel, don't!"
"Don't what?"
Noel asked thickly. Christine slapped the light on, exposing the purple bags under her husband's eyes, the sharpness of his cheekbones somehow more pronounced.
"I just want..."
He trailed off. "Can't you leave the transcription for, like, a day?" Christine demanded.
"Everything's still fresh,"
Noel said.
I'm zoned."
"You're being weird. Really fucking weird.
You're being dramatic."
Christine went to the bathroom, flicked the light on. She ran cold water over her arm. Her reflection in the mirror looked pale and sick. She prodded her stomach.
"Come on," Noel groaned from the bed. "You don't need a band-aid, Chrissy."
"Can't you shave?" Christine demanded, coming back. "Unpack? Call your dad to tell him you're back so he doesn't call me again?" The fresh mark was blooming on her arm, and when Noel saw it, his expression was something she didn't like. Christine put her other hand over top to hide it.
"I didn't know he called you,"
Noel said. "I'm gonna sleep in the study, just for tonight."
"I'm sorry. Look, I'm sorry."
"It's fine."
"You hate the hide a bed."
Noel rolled up and out of the covers. He scratched at his neck.
"I'll go,"
he said.
"Are there pillows?"
"In the linen closet," Christine said. She stopped to get them on their way to the study and then held them against herself while the hide-a-bed unfolded with a creak and a clunk. Noel took the pillows without smiling. He tossed them onto the bed.
"Good night,"
he said. It wasn't. Christine needed a swim, so she left early in the morning with the sky still dark and didn't even open the study door, just exchanged a good morning, goodbye with Noel's half-asleep voice. Exhaust was billowing on the cold roads like a fog as she drove, one hand on her swim bag. She dialed her mother at a stoplight. A voice thick with sleep or Valium, answered on the fifth ring.
Hi, honey. What is it?
Hi, Mom.
The light lanced green through the clouds of exhaust and Christine drove.
I just had a question about the thank you notes. I'm still finishing up and—
Noel's back, isn't that right? Give him my love. Hugs. How's his frostbite?
I will, Christine said. The thank you note for Uncle Caro, I can't remember his girlfriend's name. Was it Cheryl?
No.
Carol?
No.
Hell, I can't remember either.
Noel's acting different.
There was a staticky pause, and then her mother's voice came edged with a sigh.
What do you mean?
Just, I don't know, Christine said. And she didn't. Not quite. Doing weird things? Not eating? Yesterday, after breakfast, he didn't eat anything all day. He's, like he's obsessing over his transcription. He won't talk to me.
Well, he's driven, you know.
Not like that.
She dropped her indicator and turned into the Glenora parking lot, still mostly empty of cars.
And it's a good thing. It really is.
Another pause.
A lot of things might be or look a little different now. All those little things that were nice, you know, endearing. A lot of those things look different when you realize it's for the rest of your life.
It's not a honeymoon is over thing, Mom, Christine said, putting the car into park. It's been over for a while.
I mean, your father, my God, he had his days,
weeks, years, but it was all worth it.
I never once thought of leaving him. And Noel's a good man, a really good man. It's all about compromises, isn't it? People thinking marriage is supposed to be easy. Makes me laugh. It's all about sacrifices. There were things I wanted to do. Plenty of things.
I'm not talking about leaving him, Mom. I'm just saying he's acting funny and I don't know why.
She turned off the engine and fumbled the key into her coat pocket.
This thing with the storm.
Sharon. It was definitely Sharon, and half his age, too. Maybe a prostitute.
Look, honey, just stop worrying.
He hasn't even been back for a week.
Go for a swim, you'll feel better.
Thanks, Christine said, hefting her bag.
Bye. Love you.
Bye, honey.
She swam longer than she'd meant to, churning up and down the lane until the water felt bathtub warm, and so she went to school with her hair still hanging wet wires and the toothed trace of swim goggles around her one eye like a sucker scar. But she did feel better, even though Elijah and Brayden had to be sent off to the principal for the third week running. Noel didn't answer her text, or the second one. She tried not to worry about it. She fixed a smile to her face as she climbed the stairs to the apartment, went down the hallway that always smelled like weed and Febreze, and keyed open their door. It was dark inside again. Christine flicked on the lights and checked the bare sink. No dishes. She opened the fridge. Nothing touched.
Hey, Mr. Linguist, Christine called. Where are you?
No reply. Christine remembered the noise-canceling headphones and went looking. She was barely even surprised when she heard the computer hum from behind the study door. Cold was seeping out from the bottom of it. She eased the door open. Noel was hunched over the laptop like an old man. The shadows hollowed out his cheeks, and for a moment his eyes looked like black holes. Then he looked up with a bleary grin and pulled the headphones down around his neck.
Hey.
Hi.
How were the little terrors today?
Noel slapped the laptop shut.
Good, Christine said. Fine.
That little boy, that Elijah, he didn't make trouble?
Christine cracked a smile.
Yeah, he did. A little bit.
He's trying to impress you,
Noel said, scooting over on the rolling chair.
He has a crush.
Hmm.
That's why I make trouble.
Noel caught her wrist, the not-sore one, and folded both hands around it.
I'm sorry about last night, he said. I don't know what's in my head sometimes.
You scared me a little, Christine said. She gave a smile. It's okay. It's nothing, really.
Noel's hands felt like ice. The frostbite was ugly. Why is the window open?
The laptop's been overheating,
Noel said.
I thought maybe if it's colder in the study, maybe that helps.
Hungry?
I found something in the fridge,
Noel said. Christine stiffened.
No, you didn't.
What?
You didn't take anything out of the fridge, Christine said. You didn't eat anything, did you? You've been in here all day.
I got something at the second cup,
Noel said, but he let her pull her arm away. Your shoes were still where you left them yesterday.
You're a detective or something?
Noel was still smiling, but only with his mouth.
You photograph where in the closet I put my shoes?
Why are you lying about this? Christine snapped. Are you on a fucking hunger strike or something? Why are you acting like this?
Like what?
Noel asked, still prone in the office chair, still not angry. Christine wanted him to stand up so she could shove him back down. She felt hot and sick all over. Was there somebody else up there? She asked.
What do you mean?
Noel asked, and now his eyes were finally narrowing. I mean, did you fuck somebody while you were up there? Christine demanded. You called once the whole fucking time, and now you come back? You won't talk to me? You're acting so fucking weird?
Of course not.
Noel was up, teeth bared.
Of course I didn't. Did you?
Oh my God, Noel. Christine gave a shaky laugh. Just shut up, Noel. They stood frozen for a long moment, Christine's nails digging crescents in her palms. She watched Noel's face work until the grimace smoothed over.
Maybe I have a bug, he said slowly. My stomach doesn't feel right. I didn't want you to worry.
Christine nodded. She rubbed her eye with the heel of her hand. What happened in the storm? She finally asked. Do you even remember calling me? They had a satellite phone in the infirmary and you called me in the middle of the night.
I remember calling,
Noel said, cautious. Do you remember what I told you? Christine asked, remembering how she'd gone to the bathroom, flicked on the lights, pulled out the test again just to be sure. That was before she'd realized how late it was, that something was wrong.
I don't.
Noel shook his head.
I don't remember what I said either.
You were delirious, Christine said, wrapping her arms around herself. The bite on her shoulder throbbed again. You told me how you got stranded, right? Between the station and the village? One of those storms that comes from nowhere.
Worst they'd seen in years,
Noel said.
They told me that later, yeah.
His voice had an unsteadiness Christine was unused to hearing, and somehow it drained all the anger out of her.
What else did I say? He asked.
You said the wind felt like teeth.
Like death,
Noel said. The skidoo broke down, so you tried to walk back to the village.
Went the wrong way, they told me later.
You said the mucus in your nose and the spit in your mouth were so frozen up you couldn't breathe, and the wind was like teeth. Christine paused. You said you lost your hands, then your feet. Like being disembodied. Like floating.
Should have died,
Noel muttered.
Should have frozen to death.
They told me that, after they took the phone away from you, Christine said. I mean, it's a miracle you're all right. She shrugged helplessly. Doesn't this feel better, she asked, to talk about it? Isn't this what's been bothering you?
What else did I say?
Noel probed. I don't remember, Christine said. You were fevered. You know, delirious.
Did I say what I saw?
Noel's eyes were wide.
Christine, tell me.
Yeah, you did. Christine swayed, foot to foot. You thought you saw someone else in the storm. An old man. Noel shut his eyes now, breathing quick and shallow.
What did he look like?
Tall. Christine said. Taller than the trees. Skinny like those starving kids they show on UNICEF ads. And he was naked. She stopped. People see things, you know. Your brain was practically... It must have been practically shutting off.
He didn't have a face,
Noel said.
Just a big dark mouth.
Big black hole. I still remember it so clear.
Clearer than what actually happened.
I think you might have PTSD or something, Noel. I'm worried.
It's nothing like that.
Noel's voice was strained. He opened his eyes, blinked.
I haven't been myself, I know. I just need to get this transcription done and then I'll be done with it all. I'm looking for this one story. I know it's in there somewhere. Just give me the week, Chrissy. Be patient for me.
Of course, Christine said. I get it. Really,
She put her hand against Noel's hip. It felt sharp enough to cut.
You do?
Yeah, I mean, Christine paused. If you need to get through this transcription so you can be done with everything, Storm included, and just stop thinking about it, then yeah, I get it. And then you'll be yourself again. I get it.
They embraced, and it felt like all angles. Christine wasn't sure, but she almost thought her hands could make out the nodes of his spine under his thin wool sweater. He said he didn't want to pass on whatever bug was in his stomach, so Noel slept in the study again. They pretended it was a sort of game, and reminded each other of the weekend Noel's French Catholic parents had stayed with them, back during the engagement, when they'd had to arrange all their things so it looked like they slept in separate rooms. On Tuesday, Christine stayed late at the school with her lesson plans, hoping she'd come back to find Noel antsy and missing her, something simmering on the stove, maybe a sketch pad out on the coffee table or a comedy queued up on Netflix. That didn't happen. So on Wednesday, she stayed late at the school to minimalize the time between arriving home and going to sleep alone. She pretended she was married to a genius, consumed by his latest work, and she was making sacrifices. That night, Christine woke up cold. The shadows in her room were Baltic blue, and when she nudged her phone, the screen read 3:42 a.m. She pulled her feet back under the sheets, coaxing a static crackle, and then rolled over. The apartment door thunked. Christine sat up, clutching her phone. Half of a dream was fogging the inside of her skull. She padded into the hallway on bare feet, navigating by the light of her screen, and felt the cold coming from the study. The door was wide open. So was the window. She hauled it shut with both hands, breathing an icy cloud, wondering about the pipes, how long it took for them to freeze in this weather. Snow was blowing in drifts off roofs and balconies, through the bony branches of a tree where a black garbage bag fluttered. Someone was in the stairwell, feet slapping the plastic-capped steps. Christine left the study, checked the bathroom, hoping but knowing better, and then found her jacket and keys. Her inchoate dream was dancing in the back of her head. She locked the door and circled down the four flights that had made moving such an ordeal and such a triumph. She trailed her hand on the nick they'd left with the corner of their big stupid couch.
"Noel?" she called.
The reply was the click and catch of the exterior door opening, closing. She went quickly down the last flight, zipping her coat up to her neck. The forecast had been for an overnight drop down to minus 30, cold enough to make metal burn. Christine felt a thrumming under her skin as she came to the glass door. Outside, the lampposts spilled yellow pools on the lumpy ice street. A disconnected shadow was crossing the empty road, going towards the park. The playground Christine had wanted nearby, even though it had seemed too early to think about kids. She opened the door, and the cold bit her hard.
"Noel!"
she shouted, feeling ice rasp her throat, freeze her nostrils. The shadow didn't turn around. Christine pulled up his number by muscle memory and called him as she followed. She held her phone up like a torch, listening to the soft chime, peering into the dark. There was no pickup, but she hadn't expected one, and now anxiety was gnawing at her stomach as she reached the park, rounded the corner of the half-painted gazebo. Noel was ankle-deep in the snow, back turned toward her, and he was naked. In the fluorescent light from the gazebo, his skin looked wax pale, all but translucent, bruised with cold blue shadows. Christine's eyes traced the cavities of his body. His spine looked sharp as scalpels. He was not shivering, not moving. Christine was trembling all over. The dream was coming back to her now. She didn't want him to turn around, because she knew what she'd see. A raw red throat like a subway tunnel, gnashing teeth, no eyes. Her fingers were going numb at her sides.
"Noel, this isn't funny," Christine said, halting. "You're gonna freeze to death. You're gonna get more frostbite."
Noel turned, and it was Noel's face, heavy with sleep. He gave her a confused look. He looked down at his purple-scarred fingers.
"You're sleepwalking,"
Christine took a hesitant step, then another, crunching through the snow. Come on, you're going to freeze. Come on, you're sleepwalking like the time in Calgary at the hotel. She gripped his hand and tugged. He followed, stumbling slightly, red feet battered by ice. Christine tried not to look at his ruined toenails. They walked slowly, slowly, snow peppering their faces and searing their lips. They passed the creaking playground with its rubber swings, the ones they'd sat in, dragging circles in the snow with their boots while they looked up at the apartment complex and invented such big, beautiful dreams. She tried to picture Noel pushing a tiny body, bundled in a parka, red-cheeked, but didn't manage it. The wind picked up as they crossed the road, and by the time they reached the door, it felt like teeth on Christine's bare face. In the morning, Christine left before Noel could wake up and wonder about the bathtub full of lukewarm water, or the towels wrapped around him and under him on the couch. Christine had played with the thermostat before and after eating breakfast, but the apartment was still cold. She needed the pool, the chlorine warmth of it, the lactic acid in her arms and shoulders. She threw up before she left. She dialed her mother at the yield sign.
Hi, honey. The voice was faux cheery. Sorry, I meant to return your call yesterday. It completely slipped my mind. I was over at the Blackstocks. You know how she talks.
I don't really remember them, Christine said. I was out walking last night and I noticed some vacancies in the apartment down the road.
Oh?
Christine's nails drummed the wheel. Well, I was wondering if you're still thinking about that. You know, about moving. We talked about it in the summer, remember?
Too cold up there. Did we talk about that?
You said you wanted to be closer, Christine said. She bit her lip. Grandkids?
Honey, do you have news?
She thought about telling her for a second, imagining how her mother's voice would turn instantly to sunshine. No, she relented. I just meant, you know, for the future. She could hear a disappointed breath on the other end.
Too cold, honey, and besides, you know I wouldn't be able to leave this place. Not after all the work your father put into it. So much of himself he put into it. It just wouldn't feel right.
I thought you said that the upkeep...
I can manage, honey. I'm sturdy. Besides, you don't need your mother hassling you all the time. You and Noel have each other now. It's normal to be... I don't know, a little overwhelmed at first, trying to make it as a young couple, especially with him doing the doctorate. But I know you can make it work. You're a good girl.
An SUV honked from behind and Christine realized that she hadn't moved from the yield sign. She pulled away, ending the call without saying goodbye, and wiped at her stinging eyes. When she got home from school, she went straight to the study, rumpled card clutched in her palm. She could hear the laptop hum from under the door. She opened without knocking. I made you an appointment, Christine said, with this counselor. It's through the university. Noel glanced up. His face was still swallowed between headphones and his eyes were strangely cloudy. He tapped something out on the keyboard. Aren't you going to ask about last night? Christine said softly. Noel said nothing. The window was shut, but he was shirtless. His collarbones had grown a new geometry, skimming up like shark fins. Sweat was beaded under his hairline. You sleepwalked out into the park, Christine said. It was fucking 40 below. You could have died. Noel gave a fractional shrug. His eyes returned to the screen, and Christine could tell from the swipe of his finger that the volume was going up. I wish you had cheated on me, she said. Noel tapped his headphone to show he couldn't hear. His smile was too broad, too many teeth, a Cheshire Cat grin. I wish I'd cheated, Christine said, feeling a tingle up and down her back, something cold and angular in her gut. Noel said nothing. Christine dropped the appointment card and left. The next day, she spent lunch hour talking in circles with the health center. They mumbled at her about seasonal depression, flu virus.
When it came time to teach ecosystems, she begged someone out of the staff room to watch her class watch YouTube clips about photovores and herbivores and carnivores. She went to the bathroom and speed-read through Wikipedia articles and WebMD links. She tried to throw up. A few people asked her if she was all right, and she nearly told them. When she got home, the apartment was empty and Noel's shoes were not in the closet. It seemed like the thermostat had finally kicked in because she didn't get goosebumps when she shrugged off her coat. Christine hunted the bare counters for a note for a good 5 minutes before she gave up and put some Thai in the microwave. Maybe he'd finished the transcription. Maybe if she went to the bathroom, she'd find bristles in the sink, and then he'd be arriving back with clean-shaven cheeks, a bottle of white wine, takeout from the Mediterranean place they'd loved so much that first month after moving in. She would tell him she had news. He would already know. For a moment, the image was so clear that Christine nearly stopped the microwave and put the leftovers back into the fridge. Instead, she went to the study. The door was wide open again, but the window was shut. Noel hadn't taken the laptop with him. Christine hesitated for a moment, then plucked it off the desk and sat down on the hide-a-bed with it. Her hand kneaded the sheets while it booted up. The password screen appeared, and Christine put in her name, clacked the enter key. The affirmative chime made her almost smile. The transcription window was already waiting, a block of IPA symbols. Christine tried to remember the phonetics classes she'd taken, most of the sounds she'd already forgotten. One word seemed to be recurring. Windago. She pulled up the next window and saw that Noel had translated a section into English. At the top, it was labeled Audio 48, MP3. Christine clicked back to the sound files and pulled the headphones up over her ears. She started to read. The Windigo is hunger, and hunger is the Windigo. A man traveled by night. He hunted the herd. The Windigo hunted the man. A man traveled by night and through the wood, and the blizzard snow drove him off his trail. The Windigo hunted the man. Its arms were the cold and its teeth were the wind. A man had death inside, in stomach. The cold kills. The hunger kills. Hunger is the Windigo. A man lies down in the snow. His body is given to the ice. A man traveled alone. The Windigo comes to him with singing open mouth. The Windigo has jaws as icicles. The Windigo gives to the man a dark, warm heart of human meat. A man can die, or a man can eat. A man traveled by night. He ate the Windigo's offering. The man lives. The hunger stays. Hunger is the Windigo. A man traveled by night, Chrissy. She flung upright, all her nerves sparked at once. Noel was inches away, and his eyes were black as jet. The laptop crashed to the floor between them. Christine's heart hammered in her throat. His face was gaunt, stretched thin, canvas over bones. "Why did you write that?" Christine whispered.
"I didn't,"
Noel said. The glass Pyrex pan from the microwave was clutched in his one hand. He held it out between them, arm shaking slightly.
"Bullshit, you didn't. What do you mean? What do you mean you didn't write it?"
Christine stepped back and felt the cold edge of the hide-a-bed against the bends of her knees. Noel's pale face was slick with sweat.
"I translated it,"
he said, voice wavering.
"It was already there. I knew it was there, I just had to find it. Those old men had so many stories."
He held the Pyrex out again, still shaking, and Christine took it so it wouldn't fall.
"Why are you doing this?"
Christine demanded. The glass was cold again.
"Why are you fucking inventing this?"
"I'm not," Noel pleaded. "Chrissy, look."
And she had to. He held up his spidery hand, so much more bone than she remembered it, wrists like doorknobs, and planted his teeth in the webbing between thumb and finger. With a wet, tearing sound, he sheared through the flesh. Christine's lungs caught. She anticipated the spray of bright red blood, but there was nothing. Something thick and black glistened along the torn skin, and then suddenly the hand was back together again.
"It can't be me,"
Noel said.
I tried.
Oh my God, Noel.
His face contorted all at once and he lunged, his teeth suddenly canine. Christine swung the glass dish in the same motion. It slammed against his temple with a thick crack. Noel was reeling off to the side, cursing in French, and Christine was pushing past him, slamming the door, throwing herself against it. Her breath came in a wail. Noel's body thumped against the door once, then twice. Christine shoved back with her shoulders, and then he stopped.
"We're gonna call emergency,"
Christine said when her heart was beating again.
"I'm dialing 911. There's something, I don't know, some disease you picked up there. I know this isn't you. I know it can't be you."
She couldn't keep her voice steady. It slipped away from her between words.
"Oh, fuck,"
came Noel's voice, raw.
"Oh, fuck.
I drove to the university hospital. That's where I was. Jacob, you remember Jacob, the med student. He told me how they keep cadavers. I thought maybe, I don't know, I couldn't get in. They called security."
"This can't be real, Noel,"
he went on like he hadn't heard.
"Then I thought, a morgue maybe, or I don't know,"
he gave a broken laugh.
"A graveyard, maybe that. I have to know, I just have to. I'm gonna die soon. If I don't eat, I'm going to die."
Christine was muffling a sob in her hand, biting down as hard as she could.
"A doctor,"
she gasped.
"This can't be for doctors. When you're Wendigo, you're Wendigo. Until you give in. That's what they said."
"And then?"
"I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know."
He stopped.
"There are more stories. More transcriptions. Maybe if I keep going, keep looking. I don't know."
Christine didn't reply. She sat against the door, tears sticky on her cheeks, and waited for hours. Waited for Noel's breathing to turn regular, shallow but regular, so she was sure he was asleep. She moved the bookcase in front of the study door, groaning and scraping. It was heavy. Her hands came away with deep, red welts. She was up early the next morning, wiping down the kitchen counters and stovetop with Purell so everything gleamed. When she popped the ice cubes out of their tray, they skittered off the table and onto the floor. Her hands were shivering as she dropped them one by one into a plastic bag. She set her wedding ring on the counter and dialed her mother.
"Hey, honey, what's up? Call me by my name."
Christine's voice came in a sob. She tamped it down. "What's wrong, Christine?"
"It's nothing,"
Christine said, toying with the ring.
"I just remembered. That cousin you had, the farmer, he lost his hand in a thresher. He just wore it on the other finger, right? His wedding ring, I mean, he wore it on the right?"
"That's right, yes, on the right. I think that might be how they do it in Europe, too."
"Okay."
Christine packed more ice around her left ring finger, waiting for the numb.
"I was just remembering that."
She went to the counter, to the shiny Cutco knives, another wedding gift. She tried to remember the sharpest one.
"Was that all? I'm half asleep, honey."
"When Dad died, you said you'd have traded anything, didn't you?"
Christine asked.
"Anyone or anything?"
There was a long pause. Christine looked down at her left hand, thinking of how it cupped when she swam, how the fingers all melded together and bit the water just so. She thought about the small, warm thing growing in her belly.
"I don't remember. I don't remember exactly what I said."
"Okay,"
Christine said, turning the stovetop on.
"Bye, Mom."
"Bye, honey."
Christine held the ice around her finger and stared at the stove element, waiting for it to turn orange.
That was Rich Larson's Dark Warm Heart, as read by Alex Ford. When Alex isn't rocking around the nation in her band, Ford Theater Reunion, she's holed up in her guest room following a different passion, recording audiobooks and editing manuscripts. An avid reader and writer, she delights in helping people bring their creativity to life. You can check out her exploits, mystery bruises, and a most handsome cat on Facebook or Instagram. Thank you, Alex. Well, children of the night, the hour is late, and we've run out of stories to tell. For now. If you haven't already, we would love your support over on Patreon or via PayPal on our website. Tales to Terrify is free to listen to, but it certainly isn't free to produce. Bringing you quality stories week after week is a labor of love and terror for all of us. And a small donation goes a long way. Go to patreon.com/talestoterrify or donate via PayPal through the link near the bottom of our homepage at talestoterrify.com. Also, like us or leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Reviews are tremendously helpful in keeping us on the charts so we can worm our way into the ears of new listeners. Our show is produced by our editors, Seth Williams and Pete Morsellino, and myself, Drew Sebastini, with assistance from Meredith Morgenstern and Julia Zellman, and theme music by Diane Severson. Tales to Terrify is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. Join us again next week as we conjure fresh fears with more Tales to Terrify.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.